The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to America's Web Radio. This is Ron Bachman, and you're listening to Healthcare Insight. For regular listeners of this program, you know that we are not talking about healthcare. We talk about just about everything but healthcare these days because we're so far away from private market health insurance. So we've been talking about political issues, international issues, domestic issues. We've been looking at particular personalities of interest. And today I've got a very exciting program for you. Today I want to talk about one of the most interesting, fascinating minds in the United States. In fact, in the world today, one of the world's richest men, if not the richest man at any particular point in time, Elon Musk. And Elon Musk has got one of the most fascinating minds and of curiosity, of development, of pushing forward with new ideas that people never would have thought possible. He's involved. Obviously, people know that he bought previously known as Twitter. He now calls it X, that he is doing space flights. He's doing Tesla cars. He's involved in artificial intelligence and so many other leading edge areas that can affect our lives. You know, there are only a few people in history that do things that dramatically affect the lives of each and every one of us, the regular common person out there, whether that's Thomas Edison or whether it's Albert Einstein or Steve Jobs, Bill Gates. So many people have created and invented things and have pushed things forward into the general public that changes our perception of the world, our perception of the universe, our perception of our own faith, of our relationships with other people, our ability to absorb and be more knowledgeable ourselves, how we communicate in a free and open way. And so I want to delve into Elon Musk's brain a little bit with asking him a series of questions. This is available on YouTube if you want to go get it, but most people don't see that. And I really wanted to bring in the snippets of the insight to his knowledge, to his understanding, to his way of thinking that is so different from normal people. And that's what makes him a genius in many ways, that he's able to think about things and has a mind that's sort of geared in that way of solving the impossible, of connecting with people who have brilliant ideas that he can rely on to actually develop or create all these new concepts that he has in mind. So, well, one of the things that has been at the forefront of the news lately that many of you listeners out there probably are aware of is that he apparently used Twitter to put out a tweet after the Hamas attack on Israel that was distorted, as many times things are on the internet, distorted as being anti-Semitic. Now, I think the left and the media has thought that because he bought Twitter and it's no longer used as sort of a liberal mouthpiece controlled by the government and influencing democratic, liberal, progressive votes, that he's turned on to the right side of politics. And I think we will delve into that today and see that he's not on the right or the left. He's in the form of truth and our own constitutional rights, and is a strong believer in the United States and our basic core values and principles. And so being hit by the left and by the media for something that's distorted, I think, is maybe new to him and is surprising to him. So with this supposed anti-Semitic tweet, let me ask him to explain a little bit about when all this controversy was developing. How did you really feel about it, Mr. Musk? How did you feel when you were being attacked, and what did you try to do to deflect it?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I did clarify almost immediately what I meant. I would say that was, you know, if I could go back and say I should, in retrospect, not have replied to that particular person, and I should have written in greater length as to what I meant. I did subsequently clarify it in replies, but those clarifications were ignored by the media. And essentially, I handed a loaded gun to those who hate me and arguably to those who are anti-Semitic, I'm quite sorry. That was not my intention. Post on my primary timeline to be absolutely clear that I'm not anti-Semitic, and that I, in fact, if anything, am philo-Semitic.
Just to put a final point on this anti-Semitic rant that the left is charging unfairly Elon Musk with, many of the advertisers, and particularly Disney, who's gone so woke lately that many conservatives have been avoiding them and blackmailing or blackballing Disney, not going to their movies and not going to their park and all those sorts of things. Many of you may know that Elon Musk had a strong message for Bob Iger that he'll briefly mention only by calling him Bob in a minute in response to this idea that advertisers are going to leave X, and some have. And so here's his actual response that you may have heard in the news, and a little bit of an explanation as to what his thinking was behind this this rant against people trying to blackball him.
If somebody's going to try to blackmail me with advertising, blackmail me with money, go f*** yourself.
Now, we had to bleep out the F-bomb that he threw in that interview, but you get the message that he was basically telling the advertisers to go and do whatever to themselves, that he didn't really care, and he wasn't going to be blackmailed by finances.
Go yourself. Is that clear? I hope it is. Hey, Bob, that's how I feel. Don't advertise.
Well, Mr. Musk, if anybody knows anything about Elon Musk, it's probably around Tesla and the electric cars. Tell us about Tesla and how you feel about what you've been able to accomplish at Tesla during this whole startup of the electric vehicle movement in the United States.
We focus on making the best products, and Tesla's gotten to where it's gotten with no advertising at all. Tesla currently sells twice as much in terms of electric vehicles as the rest of the electric car makers in the United States combined. Tesla has done more to help the environment than all other companies combined. It would be fair to say that, therefore, as a leader of the company, I've done more for the environment than everyone else, any single human on Earth.
Well, certainly true that if electric vehicles and the whole movement towards electrification away from fossil fuels, many people think, is critical to the environment and global warming. But there are also a lot of people out there that are just trying to make hay out of this whole global warming movement just to feel good, but aren't really doing anything about it. Tell us what your thinking is about them.
I'm saying what I care about is the reality of goodness, not the perception of it. And what I see all over the place is people who care about looking good while doing evil.
Mr. Musk, that's an interesting concept that people want to look good, but while they're doing that, they're actually doing evil. Can you expound on that a little bit in your own mind of how people really should be doing good and actually being sure that that's being accomplished as opposed to maybe making contributions to organizations that wind up doing not so good, but the person giving the money or the funding or the celebrity status makes them feel good, but in fact, they end up doing evil and they don't even know it. Give us some examples of that, especially around the Israeli situation.
The Jewish people have been persecuted for thousands of years. There is a natural affinity, therefore, for persecuted groups. This has led to the funding of organizations that essentially promote any persecuted group or any group with the perception of persecution. This includes radical Islamic groups. Everyone here has seen the massive demonstrations for Hamas in every major city in the West. That should be jarring. Well, a number of those organizations received funding from prominent people in the Jewish community. Right. They didn't expect that to happen. But if you generically, without condition, sort of fund, if you fund persecuted groups in general, some of those persecuted groups, unfortunately, want your annihilation. And what I meant by that, and I subsequently clarified, is that it's unwise to fund organizations that support groups that want your annihilation. Let's say you fund a group, and that group supports Hamas, who wants you to die. Perhaps you should not fund them.
Gosh, what a great concept. Don't fund people who want to ultimately kill you. If only we did that at the federal government level, because we've been sending money to Iraq, Iran, even to Hezbollah and into the Gaza Strip in the sense of trying to be humanitarian at times, and we wind up giving our enemies funds that come back just to bite us. I mean, I'm even thinking back to Obama sending $150 billion on pallets of cash that were sent to Iran. And we're talking about a funding bill that has $100 million for the Hamas controlled areas where it's supposedly for humanitarian reasons. But, you know, everything that was ever sent there to help for humanitarian reasons was turned into military use and weapons and preparation to attack Israel. So what a great concept. If only we could do that whole idea of being sure that what we're funding is actually going for good rather than just making us feel good. Well, let me turn the topic a little bit here and get away from the Israeli issue at the moment. And let's talk about the other area that people would know you well for, and that's for buying Twitter and renaming it X. Tell us about this town square concept and idea that you think is so valuable and you hold so near and dear to your own heart as part of the United States Constitution of the exercise of free speech.
The aspiration for X is to be the global town square. Now, if you were to walk down to, let's say, Times Square,
right?
Do you occasionally hear people saying crazy things?
Yes.
The joke I used to make about old Twitter was it was like giving everyone in the psych ward a megaphone. I'm aware that things can get promoted that are negative beyond the sort of circle of somebody simply screaming crazy things in Times Square, which happens all the time. You know, it's pretty rare for something, frankly, that is hateful to be promoted. It's not that it never happens, but it's fairly rare. I mean, I would encourage people to look at, for those that use the system, when you look at the feed that you receive, how often is it hateful, and over time has it gotten more or less hateful? And I would say that if you look at the X platform today versus a year ago, I think it is actually much better.
Well, I hate to break in, but we need to take a quick commercial break. I think our audience, at least I hope our audience is understanding, we're going to delve deeply into the mind of this genius. So hang with us. So we're going to come back and we're going to ask him what his thoughts are and what his beliefs are in various areas of involvement that he's going to have effects on our daily lives. So stay with us. This is really important stuff for you to hear and understand.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Hey folks, this is Victor with the On Point with Victor show. Make sure you listen every Tuesday 1 to 2 only right here on America's Web Radio, the On Point with Victor show. Remember folks, I'm not angry, I'm just right. And you can find out why every Tuesday from 1 to 2, the On Point with Victor show only right here on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the americasbroadcastnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to America's Web Radio. Today we are taking time to talk to listen to comment on one of the brilliant minds of the world, Mr. Elon Musk. And so I want to continue this idea of trying to get inside his head to understand how people at that level of genius and that level of financial ability to do all sorts of creative and thoughtful things, that they're not only thoughtful, but they have the resources, they have the contacts, they have the business acumen to actually pull some things off that none of us could ever get done, even if we thought of them. So in looking into his brain, into his mind, he has been commented on himself. He's as saying that his mind is like a storm. So I can just envision a tornado, a hurricane going on inside his head that is full of ideas, but also full of anxieties, all sorts of concerns and sleepless nights around different things. So let's let Elon Musk talk about this idea of a weather example that he has used himself, that he has got a mind that is full of storms.
Yeah, I mean, in as much as a weather metaphor makes sense, my mind is often feels like a very wild storm. I mean, I have a fountain of ideas. I mean, I have more ideas than I could possibly execute. So I have no shortage of ideas. Innovation is not the problem. Execution is the problem. I've got a million ideas. I mean, I've got an entire design for an electric supersonic vertical takeoff jet, but I just can't do that as well. I've had that for 10 years.
Well, Mr. Musk, that's interesting insight and self-analysis of your own mind. Why do you think it's like that? Is there a root cause of that? Is there an early stage awareness of that? Tell our audience a little bit more about your own thinking and your own self-analysis of this head and brain that's full of ideas that you want to carry out.
You know, I think to some degree I was born this way, and then it was amplified by a difficult childhood, frankly. But I can remember even in happy moments when I was a kid that it just feels like there's just a rage of forces in my mind constantly. Now this, you know, productively manifests itself in technology and building things. For the most part. So, and I think on balance, the output has been very productive.
A lot of our listeners would ask the common question that occurs to me as a common person. How do you get started? What's the first company you've ever done to begin the development of this tremendous amount of wealth and capability that you have? Tell us about the first company you ever started.
The first internet company I started Zip2 was funded by a New York Times company, yep. Hearst Knight Ritter,
and I remember.
We wrote some of the software for the New York Times website, and we helped bring online several hundred newspapers that previously were only in print. Now this is in the 90s, which at this point is like, I'm like a grandpa, basically. You know, the 90s and internet feels like a pre-Cambrian era when there were only sponges.
So your real early skill in company development was around technology and finding areas where the internet or information was lacking and be able to fill in gaps to help people be more productive, to help communication, to help information flow a little bit more. So tell us about some of the technology issues that you're building into your current companies.
A lot of productive things have been done. And you can also look at Tesla as being sort of many companies in one. Like our supercharging network is, if the Tesla supercharging network were its own company, it would be a Fortune 500 company by itself. Just the supercharging system. We also make the cells. We build the power electronics and the powertrain from scratch. We have the most innovative structural design, the largest castings ever used. We have the best manufacturing technology at Tesla, better manufacturing technology than companies that have been doing it for 100 years. So So these demons of the mind, you know, are for the most part harnessed to productive ends.
Well, Elon Musk, as you describe all this new technology that you're building in and you're leading edge after even beating companies out that have been around for 100 years and the kind of technology and the preciseness and the exactness and the quality of what you're doing, help our audience try to understand what it is that drives you. Are you trying to prove something to somebody? Are you, what is your sort of philosophy of life at this point, if you will, as to what really motivates you and why all this thinking in your head comes out in very productive ways?
If I were to describe my philosophy, it is a philosophy of curiosity. I did have this existential crisis when I was around 12 about what's the meaning of life? Isn't it all pointless? Why not just commit suicide? Why exist? I read the religious texts. I read the philosophy books. Especially the German philosophy books made me quite depressed, frankly. One should not read Schopenhauer and Nietzsche as a teenager. But then I read Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is a book on philosophy in the form of humor. And the point that Adams was making there was that we don't actually know what questions to ask. That's why he said that, you know, the answer is 42. Like, basically, Earth's a giant computer, and it came up with the answer 42. But then to actually figure out what the question is, that's the actual hard part. I think this is generally true also in physics. At the point at which you can properly frame the question, the answer is actually the easy part. So my motivation then was that, well, my life is finite, really a flash in the pan on a galactic time scale. But if we can expand the scope and scale of consciousness, then we are better able to figure out what questions to ask about the answer that is the universe. And maybe we can find out the meaning of life, or even what the right question to ask is. You know, where did we come from? Where are we going? Where are the aliens? Are there aliens? These questions, you know, and is there new physics to discover? Or is this, because there seems to be some real questions around dark matter and dark energy and...
Well, let me jump in here. As you're talking about space and physics and new creative things beyond our, maybe my ability and common people's ability to think about extraterrestrial beings or life elsewhere. Let's talk about SpaceX for a minute. Tell us what your purpose is and what your philosophy is around the development of spaceships, rocket ships, and the whole SpaceX program.
So the purpose of SpaceX is to extend life beyond Earth on a sustained basis so that we can at least pass one of the Fermi great filters, which is that of being a single planet civilization. If we are a single planet civilization, then we are simply waiting around for some extinction event, whether that is man-made or natural. But if you're a single planet civilization, eventually you will something will happen to that planet and you will die. If you're a multi-planet civilization, you will live much longer. Also, a multi-planet civilization that's the natural stepping stone to being a multi-stellar civilization and being out there among the stars. So now this, I think, has two... This is not simply a defensive motivation, but it is also one that, you know, that gives meaning, man's search for meaning. But this is let me finish this philosophy point, even though it may seem rather esoteric. It may resonate with a few people. We must get past this Fermi filter of being this great filter of being a single planet civilization. And if we do that, we're more likely to understand the nature of the universe and what questions to ask. The if you're a believer in the philosophy of curiosity, then I think you should support this ambition. But it's more, there's, being a multi-planet species is more than simply, you know, life insurance for life collectively. That's a defensive reason, but I think also that life has to be more than simply solving one sad problem after another. You know, there have to be reasons for you wake up in the morning and you're happy to be alive. There have to be reasons that you have to say, why are you excited about the future? Like, what gives you hope? And if you aren't sure, ask your kids. And I think the idea of us being a space-faring civilization and being out there among the stars is incredibly inspiring, and exciting, and something to look forward to. And there need to be such things in the world.
Elon Musk, it must be wonderful for you to have that kind of optimism and hope about the future and how space and its space exploration is really driving your creativity, your curiosity, and trying to get that as a broad feeling of hope and aspiration for the people of this country, if not the world. What a wonderful message to send out, not just for young people, but for everybody. Find a mission, find a direction in your life, find something that'll get you up in the morning when you don't otherwise have to, is the message that I'm taking from that. And boy, if we could all just feel that joy of waking up in the morning and going to a job or going to an organization or carrying out a mission, wouldn't this world be wonderful? Let me change topics a little bit and ask you about how you have such confidence in the future. Where does that come from?
I mean, I think what you're sort of trying to say is that, do I at this point think, because I've been right so many times when others have said I'm wrong, that now I perhaps believe I'm right when in fact I'm wrong. No, I'm right. So, look, here's the thing. Physics is unforgiving. Physics is unforgiving. So, I mean, I have, you know, these various little sayings that I've come up with, that physics is the law and everything else is a recommendation.
Right.
In the sense that you can break any law made by humans, but try breaking a law made by physics. That's much more difficult. So if you are wrong and persist in being wrong, the rockets will blow up and the cars will fail. So this is, we're not trying to figure out what flavor of ice cream is the best flavor of ice cream.
Right.
Like, if there's 1,000 things that can happen on a rocket flight, and only one of them gets the rocket to orbit. And so being wrong results in failure when dealing with physical objects.
Well, now, audience, we're really getting into the thinking and the brains of Elon Musk and how he operates, how his thinking operates to move us forward in so many interesting and fascinating areas with SpaceX and Tesla and artificial intelligence and X and all the things that he's doing that affect our daily lives. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, and I want to dive right back into quickly the mind, the uncensored mind of Elon Musk.
If you want the truth about politics, medicine, weapons, classic cars, and more, you'll want to tune in to America's Web Radio. You can listen to all of your favorite shows live at www.americaswebradio.com or on demand on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. That's www.americaswebradio.com.
If you love classic cars, you're going to want to listen to the Classic Car Show with Tom Cox and Richard Lentinello on America's Web Radio. Live every Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern at americaswebradio.com or on demand on your favorite podcast app.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the americasbroadcastnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to this segment of America's Web Radio. Today we are looking at the mind of Elon Musk. You know, for those of you in the audience listening to this program, if you ever had a chance to look into the minds or to ask questions of Albert Einstein, of Thomas Edison, of any of the great inventors, teachers, scientists, politicians, sports people, whatever. Wouldn't it be great to jump on that opportunity and to be able to understand people in history? Well, today we have somebody who I think will be a historical figure 100 years from now, 200 years from now. And we have an opportunity to actually listen to and understand the thinking and the thoughts of this very creative, unique, eccentric in many ways individual, Elon Musk. So he has developed these companies, these organizations, Starlink, SpaceX, X, formerly known as Twitter, Tesla, and is working in so many unique areas of science and technology that I want to ask him some questions. Some of the areas he's working at have given him a very unique position. Some would say control. Some would say dominance in some of these areas. So I want to ask him about the competition, about how he positions himself in the marketplace, how much leverage does he have with other countries, China or the U.S. government, or how much leverage they might have on him. So let's hear his perspective on the development of the countries and the competitive environment that he works in.
Nothing any of my companies have done has been to stifle competition. In fact, we've done the opposite. So at Tesla, we have open sourced our patents. Anyone can use our patents for free. How many companies do you know who've done that? Can you name one? I can't. At SpaceX, we don't use patents. So I mean, just once in a while we'll file a patent just so some patent troll doesn't cause trouble. But we're not stuffing any. We've done nothing anti-competitive. I think the strange thing or the unusual thing about SpaceX and Tesla is that we've done things that have helped our competition. So at Tesla, we have made our supercharger system open access. We've made our charger technology available for free to the other manufacturers.
Well, Mr. Musk, because of the very unique nature of some of the companies that you have built, you have enormous power, whether you have patents or not, as you've described. You've been open source, so you haven't been trying to control the market. You say you've been trying to help your competition. I guess every McDonald's needs a Burger King, every Coke needs a Pepsi in order to even be better, but you certainly have focused on quality in all these different areas, but still it remains that you have an enormous amount of control because you are the first into the market as a private entrepreneur doing things like Starlink and SpaceX, and even X and Tesla have their own dominance in the particular markets you're in. So you could make decisions, and I guess a lot of people would even ask whether an individual or a private company should have that kind of power and control, or whether those should have some government insights. So could you give us a little bit of idea of where these companies are and how they should be controlled and what you're thinking about your own control of these?
I think it's important for the audience to understand that the reason I have these powers is not because of some anti-competitive actions. It's simply because we've executed very well. But, I mean, nobody's let me use our product if it's better than use somebody else's product if it's their other product's better. You know, how is it a bad thing to make better products than other companies? I mean, like I said, we're not the only company who has communication satellites. Our satellites are just much better than theirs. So it's not like we have a monopoly. Right. I mean, I think at the end of the day, if we make bad products that people don't want to use, then the users will vote with their resources and use something else.
Well, Mr. Musk, tell us about the controls, the government regulations that you have to live under. I mean, you do have enormous power and you have enormous capabilities with satellites that were helping out with the Ukraine war. They might or might not be helpful in other regional conflicts around the world. Taiwan is another example that somebody might want to be using your system. But if they did and China wound up preventing it from being used, or if after you're gone, some less benevolent owner of these assets take control, there's could be a lot of problems in the world. So tell us a little bit about the kind of oversight and regulation, because you don't have, obviously, you don't have complete control and do whatever you darn well please in developing these assets, do you?
Certainly, I mean, my company's overseen by regulators. And while, you know, once since SpaceX, Starlink, Tesla are overseen by, you know, cumulatively over 100 regulators, and actually more than that, a few hundred regulators, because we're in 55 countries. If you sum up all the times that I had an argument with regulators, of hundreds of regulators over decades, it can sound really terrible, except when they forgot to mention that there were 10 million regulations we complied with and only 5 that I disagreed with. But they list all the 5, and it sounds like, wow, this guy's a real maverick. I'm like, yeah, but what about the 10 million we complied with?
Mr. Musk, tell our audience how you deal with the potential conflicts in your basic principles and philosophy of, like on X, that you're going to have it as an open forum, free speech, when that isn't really what occurs in places like China. How much limitation can China put on what you're doing? And should you even be doing business in China in many of your companies? Tell the audience how you balance what you're trying to do to be a good steward of your products, a good developer of your products, quality, make good in the world, and the restrictions that you may come into countries that really don't have the freedoms that you would otherwise have in the United States, as an example.
The best that the X platform can do is adhere to the laws of any given country. First of all, Starlink and SpaceX are no business in China whatsoever. Tesla has one of four vehicle factories in China. And China is, you know, I don't know, a quarter of our market or something like that. So it's a quarter of the market of one company. The same is true, by the way, of all the other car companies. They also have something on that order of a quarter of their sales in China. So if that's a problem for Tesla, it's a problem for every car company. I mean, I think one has to be careful about not conflating the various companies, because I can only do things that are within the bounds of the law. I cannot do beyond that. My aspiration is to do as much good as possible and to be as productive as possible within the bounds of what is legal. More than that, I cannot do.
Well, what many people may not know is that you were on the forefront of this whole artificial intelligence AI world development that's going on. And you and Larry Page and Google and Microsoft, et cetera, were developing this, and you were trying to develop it for good and benefit and safety. So tell us about what your current thinking is around the safety issues of AI.
Well, the whole arc of OpenAI, frankly, is a little troubling, because the reason for starting OpenAI was to create a counterweight to Google and DeepMind, which at the time had 2/3 of all AI talent and basically infinite money and compute, and there was no counterweight. It was a unipolar world. And Larry and Page and I used to be very close friends, and I would stay at his house, and I would talk to Larry into the late hours of the night about AI safety.
Well, let me jump in here, because this is a critical issue as to the direction that artificial intelligence has taken. Somewhere along the line, you and Larry Page had a break in your philosophy around the safety issues and concerns of AI. Tell our audience a little bit about that event and what the break point was.
And it became apparent to me that Larry did not care about AI safety. I think perhaps the thing that gave it away was when he called me a speciest for being pro-humanity, as in, you know, like a racist, right, but for species. So I'm like, wait a second, what side are you on, Larry? And then I'm like, okay, listen, this guy's calling me a speciest. He doesn't care about AI safety. We've got to have some counterpoint here, because this seems like we could be this is no good. So OpenAI was actually started, and it was meant to be open source. I named it OpenAI after open source.
So somewhere along the way, I think you've admitted you sort of lost track of the OpenAI process, which you had started as a not-for-profit open source, as you said. You called it OpenAI so that everybody could use it and be transparent. But somehow it's turned into a business. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what your feeling is about the AI as it exists today in a for-profit market?
It is, in fact, closed source. Super closed. It should be renamed Super Closed Source for Maximum Profit AI. because this is what it actually is. I mean, fate loves irony. I mean, in fact, a friend of mine has this, says, like, the way to predict outcomes is the most ironic outcome is the most, it's like this Occam's razor, like the simplest sort of explanation is most likely. And my friend Jonah's view is that the most ironic outcome is the most likely. And that's what's happened with OpenAI. It's gone from an open source foundation, a 501c3, to suddenly it's like a $90 billion for-profit corporation with closed source. So I don't know how you go from here to there.
Well, Mr. Musk, you were the co-founders of OpenAI, which seems to have gone and those resources, whatever, bought out, and it's now more of a for-profit. So where are you today in your thinking about what you want to do with AI, or what are your major concerns about spending a lot of time or effort on reestablishing the OpenAI that you had dreamed of?
I mean, on the AI front, I'm in somewhat of a quandary here because I've thought AI could be something that would change the world in a significant way since I was in college, I mean, like 30 years ago. So the reason I didn't go build AI right from the get-go was because I was uncertain about which edge of the double-edged sword would be sharper, the good edge or the bad edge. So I held off on doing anything on AI. I could have created, I think, the leading AI company, and kind of OpenAI actually kind of is that. Because I was just uncertain, if you make this magic genie, what will happen?
Well, unfortunately, time for another commercial break. But we do have one more segment left, so audience, stay with us. I think hearing from one of the most creative people of our times, Elon Musk, is a fascinating insight into not only his creativity and his thought process, but knowing that he's got the funds to carry out these leading-edge ideas, and that his basic perspective, his personality, his basic principles, his American roots. Of course, he was born in South Africa, but he's now really a U.S. citizen living in the United States, that he is looking for ways to do good and decent things to help people of the world. And that's the legacy I think he wants to leave. So let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back to understand more in the mind of Elon Musk.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
Veteran-owned, America's Web Radio would like to thank all of our incredible patrons. We wouldn't be able to do this without you. If you are not already a patron, you can help us continue to produce some of the most informative and entertaining shows on the internet by becoming a patron. Patrons of America's Web Radio are the first to receive information about new shows and links to the latest podcast episodes. Join now and receive a free gift while supplies last. For more information and to join our family, please visit www.patreon.com/AmericasWebRadio. If you have questions, contact us at gm@AmericasWebRadio.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to what I hope you will agree, the audience out there that's listening to this and has stayed with us throughout this hour, is a fascinating insight into the mind and the thinking, the basic principles, the direction, the creativity of Elon Musk. He has been involved in developing so many things that will affect our everyday life. As I've mentioned before, wouldn't it be wonderful to take a look at and be able to talk to and understand more Steve Jobs in more recent times, but going back to whether it's Einstein or Alvin Edison or any of the great thinkers of our past. We have one in our presence, in our midst today, and he is making a dramatic impact, even if we don't always fully understand or we only hear some of the controversial things that he's done. So I want to continue this discussion on the insight and understanding of Elon Musk. Elon, in the previous section, you talked about a double-edged sword for AI, and you were worried about whether one side is sharper than the other, and you really hadn't been able to figure out how to create the safety that's required of a good AI system and how it's used in daily life and the military and government and politics and so many areas where it could be abused in various ways. Tell us about the projects that you're involved in now and why you think that they are, if you will, to use that same analogy, sort of single-edged, that would be only for the good, and there's very little downside that you can see in some of these initiatives and companies that you're developing. Tell us about those single-edged initiatives that you're engaged in.
Whereas I think building sustainable energy technology is much more of a single-edged sword, that is single-edged good. Making life multiplanetary, I think single-edged good. Starlink, mostly single-edged good. I mean, giving people better connectivity to people that, you know, don't have connectivity or too expensive, I think is very much a good thing. Starlink was instrumental, by the way, in halting the Russian advance. The Ukrainians said so. I think there's, but with AI, you've got the magic genie problem. You may think you want a magic genie, but once that genie's out of the bottle, it's hard to say what happens. I mean, the genie is certainly poking its head out.
Well, Mr. Musk, let's dig a little deeper into what's also developing around the whole artificial intelligence. And that's another term that I haven't really heard before until recently, artificial general intelligence. In other words, trying to duplicate the thinking of people, the creativity of individuals. That's a scary thought, that we can create machines that are both creative and thoughtful and have basic principles and can sort of run on their own. Where are we with the kind of thought process or programming around things that some call weights or decision-making principles that are built into these artificial and general intelligence machines? Where in the world are we with that kind of programming?
It's funny, all these weights, they're just basically numbers in a comma-separated value file. And that's our digital god, a CSV file. But that's kind of literally what it is. So I think it's coming pretty fast.
Let me jump in here, because I think that at least I understand that you have been working on something using your sort of signature letter X. So you've been working on an XAI. Can you tell us a little bit about that, because and how it might interact with your X platform, formerly known as Twitter? You have an enormous amount of data in there and commentary on what people are doing, what they're thinking, what the anything that's going on in the world. Somebody is commenting on X these days. So you have an enormous amount of data. Can you tell us how that might be used in an XAI platform?
Yeah, I mean, data is very important. You could say data is probably more valuable than gold. Yes. X is might be the single best source of data. It is, there are more you know, people, links that go to, people click on more links to X than anything else on earth. Sometimes people think Facebook or Instagram is a bigger thing, but actually there are more links to X than anything. You can, this is public information, you can Google it. So it is where you would find what is happening right now on earth at any given point in time. The whole OpenAI drama played out, in fact, on the X platform. So it is one of the, it's not, there, you know, Google certainly has a massive amount of data, so does Microsoft, but it is one of the best sources of data.
Mr. Musk, let's push this AI discussion and the dangers that you're concerned about, and understand that your ex-AI would be maybe more benevolent, but there are great dangers, apparently, in the use of AI and military, the weaponization of the AI to be able to either attack or defend the country with the kind of computer power, the kind of brain power, if you will, artificial brain power, computerized brain power, whatever you want to call it. But it could certainly lead to a doomsday occurrence somewhere down the road. So tell us what your thinking is about living in these times where such dangers may actually come to fruition.
I think we live, you know, there's that, I don't know if it's actually a real Chinese saying or not, but may you live in interesting times,
right,
which is apparently not a good thing. I would prefer to live in interesting times. And we live in the most interesting of times. I think for a while there, I was like really getting demotivated and losing sleep over sort of the threat of AI danger. And then I finally sort of became fatalistic about it and said, well, even if I knew it was, annihilation was certain, would I choose to be alive at that time or not? And I said, I probably would choose to be alive at that time because it's the most interesting thing, even if there's nothing I could do about it. So then, you know, then basically sort of a fatalistic resignation helped me sleep at night because I was having trouble sleeping at night because of AI danger. Now, what to do about it? I mean, I've been the biggest, the one banging the drum the hardest, by far the longest, or at least one of the longest, on it for AI danger. And these regulatory things that are happening, the single biggest reason they're happening is because of me.
So you've given a great deal of thought about how to overcome or to defeat the negatives of artificial intelligence, especially, I guess, I presume, on the military side and the way it might affect world peace and world war. What about on the regulatory side? What do you see happening on the regulatory side that might either slow down or prevent or at least moderate the dangers of AI?
Well, there's regulation around anything which is a physical danger to, or a danger to the public. So, like, cars are heavily regulated, communications are heavily regulated, rockets and aircraft are heavily regulated. The general philosophy about regulation is that when something is a danger to the public, that there needs to be some government oversight. So I think, in my view, AI is more dangerous than nuclear bombs. And we regulate nuclear bombs. You can't just go make a nuclear bomb in your backyard. I think we should have some kind of regulation with AI. Now, this tends to cause the AI accelerationists to get up in arms because they think AI is sort of heaven, basically.
Well, Mr. Musk, as a free market entrepreneur, you've been fighting against regulations, and now you're promoting regulations for artificial intelligence. Kind of square that round hole for us, if you will, and let our audience sort of understand where you're coming from in terms of government regulations on artificial intelligence.
One should not take what is viewed in the media as being the whole picture. There are literally hundreds, this is probably not an exaggeration, so there are probably 100 million regulations that my companies comply with. And there are probably 5 that we don't. And if we disagree with some of those regulations, it's because we think the regulation that is meant to do good doesn't actually do good. My company's automotive is heavily regulated. We would not be allowed to put cars on the road if we did not comply with this vast body of regulation. Now, you could fill up the stage with literally, you know, 6 foot high, with the regulations that you have to comply with to make a car. You could have a room full of phone books. That's how big the regulations are. And if you don't comply with all of those, you can't sell the car. And if we don't comply with all the regulations for rockets or for Starlink, they shut us down. So in fact, I am incredibly compliant with regulations. Now, once in a while, there'll be something that I disagree with. The reason I would disagree with it is because I think the regulation in that particular case, in that rare case, does not serve the public good. And therefore, I think it is my obligation to object to a regulation that is meant to serve the public good but doesn't. That's the only time I object. Not because I seek to object. In fact, I'm incredibly rule-following.
Well, Mr. Musk, we certainly appreciate all the insights and thoughts and opinions that you have. Let's sort of wrap up this this hour with where we started in the anti-Semitic world that's developing out there, and connect that to this website, TikTok, that seems to be taking over many of the young people in this country. It seems to be very anti-Semitic. There are some states who are banning it. There's a thought of a national ban on it, a concern about whether China has some nefarious reasons for sort of stirring up the pot with many of the viral videos that are on TikTok. What's your thinking about TikTok?
For teenagers and people in their 20s, they seem almost religiously addicted to TikTok. Some people will watch TikTok for like 2 hours a day. I stopped using TikTok when I felt the AI probing my mind, and it made me uncomfortable. So I stopped using it. And in terms of anti-Semitic content, I mean, TikTok is rife with that. It has the most viral anti-Semitic content by far. I don't think this is some Chinese government plot. But it is, the TikTok algorithm is entirely AI powered. So it is really just trying to find the most viral thing possible. It's what is going to keep you glued to the screen. That's it. Now, on sheer numbers, there are on the order of 2 billion Muslims in the world, and I think much smaller number of Jewish people. What, 20 million something? It's many orders of magnitude fewer. So if you just look at content production, just right, on sheer numbers basis, this is going to be overwhelmingly anti-Semitic.
Well, audience, we've reached the end of our time in looking into the mind of Elon Musk, one of the current geniuses in this world, carrying out an awful lot of projects and programs and companies that will affect our daily lives. I hope this was informative, that you've got a new insight into what could be the mad scientist. Hopefully is Dr. Good, not Dr. Evil. And please join us again next week at America's Web Radio and listen in at Healthcare Insight. We will be back next week with more news and information and personality insights. Thank you for being with us.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.